What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast, Memorial Day weekend. I actually just found that out today. I didn't even know. Shows you that I have no life. But it is a great weekend, 3 day weekend probably for many of you. Good time to drink some beers, hang out, enjoy the sun. Wherever you're living, hopefully the sun's coming out. Sun's out where I'm living. But, you know, I thought I might as well do one. I have a couple topics, a couple takes, a couple thoughts. I went to Niner practice the other day, and it got me thinking about the way some of these rookies are integrated into the systems. Obviously, the practice I was at, Nick Bosa went down, but Josh Allen's already been hurt. Quinnen Williams is hurt. Josh Jacobs is hurt. You got a lot of these high picks that are getting injured, and I think I have somewhat of a solution slash just an idea that can avoid it. Julian Edelman re-signs with the Patriots. Of course he does. Absolute legend. Get it, guy. And some thoughts on that. And then, like always, Middlecoff Mailbag. At John Middlecoff is my handle. Instagram, defense. Direct messages, wide open. Just come slide right in, and I'll answer your questions. We're going to do a big Middlecoff Mailbag kind of Q&A at the end of this podcast. But I wanted to start with this. And I say this all the time in the NBA, because I think the NBA media is always like, you got to sign the max, you got to sign the max. And today, with the NBA, all-NBA first and second team have impacts on the max contracts. And a guy can go from like $150 million to $180 million to $200 million. It has ramifications where you land. And last year, famously, Chris Paul took every penny. Even though he was a diminishing player, he was a player that needed help, took every penny. And in the NBA, it's a little different than the NFL. Like Chris Paul, when he signed his $160 million contract last year, was already worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But I say this all the time in the NFL, especially when it comes to good players, that taking a little less when you're a multimillionaire, I never give you that much credit for doing it. Like, I'm not giving Julian Edelman that much credit. Historically, he's taken a lot of less to stay with the New England Patriots. To me, he's just a get-it guy. He's self-aware. He understands the big picture. People all the time, all over America, and I say this all the time, take less for various reasons. And when I say take less or decide not to take a job that may pay a little more, I'm not talking in the millions of dollars. The average American salary is $50,000. So let's just say someone that's making $90,000 has the opportunity to take a job that's worth $130,000. But where they live, maybe their parents live in that town, which acts as a babysitter. Maybe they like the schools their kid goes to, and they turn down the job. It happens all the time all over America for tiny, tiny amounts of money. So when players show some big picture awareness to take a little less money because they're in a great situation, like, I got news for you. In football, in basketball, who you're playing with, who your coach is, who your teammates are, affect your success. And when you're introduced, and I was thinking about this for Julian Edelman, I just checked, he's never been to a Pro Bowl. He is going to be an absolute lifetime legend, not just in the NFL community, because he's a three-time champion, and he's going to be in position to win another one in these next couple years because he plays for the Patriots, but he's a made man in Boston. He will be paid the rest of his life to do deals with car dealerships, to speaking engagements, for whatever. He will have his earning potential in the, I was going to say the state, but the city of Boston, the state of Massachusetts, which, you know, is Patriot country, he's set. And he got that. And I see it, again, you see it more in the NBA. The NFL's tough, because I do understand, like, when you get your one big deal, you have to take it. But to me, when you have options, like, if you may have to take a million or two less, and I'm talking about a guy making $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 million, if you got to take a little haircut to stay in a good situation, especially with a team that's going to win, those have big picture ramifications on your life. Like Brent Jones, who would be my example around this area. Now, it's a little different. He was a Pro Bowler like three times over. He was a really good player in the early 90s for the 49ers teams. But he was never, like, it's clearly Belichick, Brady, and then probably Gronk. And then there's a group of the Brewskis, the Vrabels, the Edelmans, the McCourties, guys like that, Vinatieri's. They're all kind of lumped in a group. Well, I live in Northern California. I've lived here most of my life. and there's Montana, there's Rice, there's Lott, and there's Young. And then there's kind of a group of all these other guys. I think Brent Jones is a great example. But I know this. Brent Jones has gone on to a very lucrative career in business in the Bay Area. Everywhere he goes, he's introduced as three-time Super Bowl champion Brent Jones. End of story. Obviously, if you're a great player, you're introduced as four-time Super Bowl champion Joe Montana. Like, what do they introduce? Like, who's a player in the NFL that has just taken a ton of money? I'm trying to think of an example. Like, we'd like to welcome awesome player, put up a ton of stats, got drafted really high, made a ton of money, Calvin Johnson, right? I think that's how you're introduced. When Julian Edelman, for the rest of his life, not just in Boston, that's where he's going to make his most money, but wherever he is, maybe he's speaking to some company in Phoenix. I'd like to welcome three-time champion Julian Edelman. That's the end. That's it. End of story. And Julian Edelman is going to be, he's already a millionaire, and through this contract, he's going to make more money, but he's never been to a Pro Bowl. Who cares? He's never led the league in catches. He's never led the league in yards. I know this. He's had Super Bowl winning catches. He's made multiple Super Bowl winning plays. When I see him, I think of one thing: champion. Please welcome. I'm trying to think of a good example here. Four-time Pro Bowler. He made over $300 million or $200 million in the NFL. Josh Norman. Like, who wants to hear that guy talk? I would much rather hear Super Bowl champion Richard Sherman. Like, when you're a winner in this country, it resonates with you forever. And nothing more than in football. And I get football's a team game, and if you're not a quarterback, you have less control. But Julian Edelman, like a lot of people all over the country, know he has a really good situation. Could he make more money if he demanded a trade or ever hit free agency? 100%. But Colin said this for forever, and it's something that always resonated to me when I started listening to them, that there's not like a happier. Like, you get to a point, like, it doesn't get any better than that. And I give Edelman a lot of credit for being self-aware, for understanding how great he has it, for understanding how special what he's involved in. I see it firsthand with the Warriors. They're just get-it guys. They prioritize one thing, and that's winning. So when Klay Thompson, when he's 50 years old, is speaking at some big deal in the city, they'll introduce him, assuming they win this year, and trust me, they will. I'd like to welcome, you don't talk about how many All-Star appearances he made or how many Team USA teams he made or how much money he made. You simply say, I'd like to welcome four-time champion Klay Thompson. And the entire room perks up. Like, I got news for you. No one wants to hear Carmelo Anthony talk. I'd like to welcome, he's made $385 million in his career, Carmelo Anthony. Like, I'd like to welcome, he was franchise tagged twice, and then he got 3 years of guaranteed money. He made the playoffs one time in his career, Kirk Cousins. Like, no, I'm sorry. I'd rather introduce a Super Bowl champion. I'd rather be a Super Bowl champion. And if that meant taking a little bit less money so I get more money on the back end, so I could be remembered a legend, I have nothing but respect for Julian Edelman, and I'm glad that he's staying on the Patriots. Okay, well, I went to 49er practice. When would that have been? On Tuesday. Tuesday or Wednesday? I think it was Tuesday. Yeah, it was Tuesday. And during that practice, I mean, a pretty big, about 20 minutes in, I had worked my way over because I'm watching practice, because the first thing whenever you go to one of these OTAs, you watch the quarterbacks. And for the Niners, kind of a big deal, Jimmy Garoppolo coming back, who looks fantastic. I mean, he looks really good. But Jimmy looks good in these. The question is not like, Jimmy looks good. It's, can Jimmy stay healthy? He's played 10 games, been hurt twice. I've said on record many, many times, I believe in Jimmy. I mean, I think he's a lock top 10 guy, and I think he has the ability to get near the top 5. But he's got to stay on the field, and that's something he struggled at. And then it hit me after just watching Jimmy throw passes to the equipment guy. I'm like, oh yeah, the Niners have a number 2 overall pick. So I worked my way across the field, and I say it all the time. These practices, I mean, for NFL level, it's so easy for these guys. And you work your way over. You know, I go by the DBs. Richard's just kind of hanging. And Richard's a hard worker. I'm not trying to like say he's not doing anything, but he's just, they're just kind of, it's a chill environment. And I make my way to the defensive lineman. And the Niners have, you know, Buckner and Armstead are massive. And then I see D Ford, who's, you know, a smaller, slenderer, just speed rusher. And I go, oh, there's Nick Bosa. And I've been on record many times that I would have gone with Quinnen Williams over Nick Bosa, just because I thought his upside was higher. And again, people in the league have told me over and over they loved him. I know the Niners clearly love him. I don't think they definitely, because they've told me, don't agree with my take on Quinnen Williams. But, you know, we can agree to disagree. But then about probably 15 minutes into practice of, it's kind of like an individual drill. So like the warm-ups and everything have already happened. They're just doing get-offs with defensive linemen. And there are, they place like two or three defensive linemen as the offensive linemen to kind of simulate it. They basically tape like one kick step. And then the guy, the defensive lineman, reacts. And after one rep or might have been two, but I only saw one rep from Bosa. And again, he looked fine. All of a sudden, he kind of grabs at his shorts. I'm like, ah, there's something's weird here. And then he doesn't do anything the rest of practice. He's limping around. At one point in time, he was probably like 5 or 6 feet away from me. And listen, if you've listened to this show long enough, I'm not a very compassionate human in general, unless you're like my family member. I felt generally bad for the guy because he had that look on his face like, Jesus Christ. Like, how in God's green earth is this happening to me right now? I got hurt in high school, I got hurt last year, and now I'm hurt literally 15 minutes into my first NFL practice with the team. I know they had rookie minicamp before, but the entire team's here, and I'm hurt. And you could just see it on his face, like, oh, like how is this happening to me? And you felt for him. But I also kind of look around, and I go, John, Kyle, you know, you signed up for this. This is the risk it takes. But then, in fairness to Bosa, Quinnen Williams is hurt, Josh Allen is hurt, Josh Jacobs with the Raiders is hurt. And I can't remember where I heard this. I was going to say I heard or read it somewhere. Probably didn't read it anywhere because I listen to more things than I read. Not proud of that. Should read more. And I'm very pro-reading. I just don't read enough. But someone said it, and an NFL podcast or somewhere, that Sean McVay, and I think there's a couple other teams, I don't think the Patriots do much, don't really have a rookie minicamp. Like, they don't go on the field for rookie minicamp. Because, especially the first-rounders, but I think it's true for a lot of the high-round draft picks, basically once the combine ends and you're kind of your pro day ends, and if you had a good combine, you don't do anything at your pro day, you're not doing anything up until the draft. So you go about 2 months of just traveling around, not really working out, eating a lot, not in great football shape, while everyone on the team, you know, veteran players, second, third, fourth year players, just everyone on the team is just doing normal workouts. They're either working out on their own, like the Divas, Le'Veon and Antonio in that group, or like majority of guys, they're at the facility training. And they are, you know, just getting ready for OTAs with phase one and phase two with the strength coach. So their body, they're slowly acclimating to football stuff. Well, the rookies are kind of like, all of a sudden, Nick Bosa is just lined up right next to D Ford and DeForest Buckner, and they're asked to go full go. It's not really a fair fight if you think about it. You got one guy that's out of shape. Like, no wonder a lot of these rookies get hurt. Now, again, I'm not trying to defend Nick Bosa getting hurt. He gets hurt way too much for my liking. But my point is, like, what other business, you know, if you just hire a guy out of college, even if you're a high level like Wall Street or Google, and you're paying the guy a ton of money, in normal life, that'd be like $500K to like a 23-year-old. You don't ask him to be, you know, go to the biggest meeting of the year his second day in the office. Now, I'm not saying OTAs are necessarily the biggest meeting of the year, but it is football speed that this guy's trying to replicate, especially if you have a player in a position where another player at his position on that same team is a really good player. He's looking at D Ford. He's looking at DeForest Buckner. He's trying to match those guys' speed and their play tempo. And boom, his hamstring pulls. And boom, Josh Allen's hurt. Boom, Quinnen Williams hurt. I think, would it be nuts to maybe your first OTA or first couple OTAs and not have your rookies do anything? I know it sounds kind of crazy, besides maybe like quarterbacks and kickers and punters. Maybe just have those guys working on the side with the strength staff, and you could eliminate all the potential injuries. This is something that I just kind of thought about, especially when I heard that McVay did it. And obviously, I wouldn't even have a rookie minicamp. maybe beside like maybe have like a tryout camp with the tryout guys, but the risk of getting these guys hurt for meaningless practices, especially when a lot of these guys just aren't really in shape. And because they're, you know, some elite athletes in our country and they're 20, 21, 22, they look good. You know, when I walked by Nick Bosa, I went, damn, this guy looks pretty good. Like when I walked by Deebo Samuel, who looks pretty sweet, by the way, I go, oh, damn, this guy looks sweet. They all do. Josh Allen, all the rookies, you know, this is the NFL. A lot of the guys, besides like Kyler Murray, who's a midget, are going to look awesome. You walk by N'Keal Harry, you go, geez Louise, guy looks like a badass. But I think a lot of these guys aren't ready physically to just hit the ground running, especially because, you know, like, I think Richard Sherman's a good example, but he's the high end. Richard doesn't have anything to prove. He knows what he has to do to get ready. But I think a lot of veteran players, guys that have established themselves as like starters, they're not trying to, you know, prove to the entire organization how great they are day one. But I think we all can relate. Anytime you've been a young person in a situation when you first get hired and you're working around new people, it's just human nature, especially, and speaking for males, where you just try to prove yourself way too fast. And I'm actually, the more I thought about it, it's kind of crazy there haven't been more young guys getting hurt. When you factor in, again, that they were flying around the country not doing that much, and then just seeing the tempo at practice, even though the practices are relatively easy, you still hold yourself next to the other guy at your position that has just been training with the team. And it's risky, and it's avoidable. You know, it's like in every other business, you kind of slowly work employees into it. Now, I would imagine that Kyle Shanahan or whoever would say, we're slowly working them into it inside the meetings. We're not throwing the whole playbook. That's fine. But we all know, and anyone that's been to a football practice at any level, once you get on that field, and I felt the intensity with the coaches, they just coach like it's a normal practice because you're just a coach. You just put on your whistle, you put on your hat, and you're just coaching full speed. And players, they're kind of the same. They just, unless you're a super veteran guy that's a super made man, that's why Richard's not a great example. Any young player is still trying to prove themselves. Like, I'm out of practice, and this guy has a lot to prove. But Solomon Thomas was flying around like his hair was on fire. He has to. And that means a lot of young guys doing that. I think it's really risky. And props to Sean McVay for kind of being on the forefront of realizing, because the moment you get out on the field, you can't help yourself. And I remember as a scout, you want to see everyone go full go. I know the coaches do, and the players do too. You almost have to hold them back from themselves. And I think some of these teams, especially when you have an injury prone, you know, high pick, you probably got to be careful. Let's you know, crawl, then walk, then run, instead of just day one, try to go full sprint. Again, I'm not saying literally go full sprint. Well, actually, the offensive and defensive linemen, about halfway through practice, just went to the other field and just did gassers, you know, just to get in shape. By then, Bosa had already been hurt. He just watched. So it's like, God, now my guy's not being in good shape relative to these guys, and he's injured. It's a double whammy. So some of these teams got to start thinking outside the box. Well, great part about doing a podcast, you can like kind of start and stop. The basketball game was getting tight, so I just had to press pause, watch the end of the basketball game for about the last 30 minutes before we got to the Middlecoff mailbag. There are some great, I mean, Aaron Rodgers could not chug a beer. Bakhtiari slammed two. He's sitting next to Christian Yelich, the MVP for the Brewers. He then slammed one. Then there's a video going viral of Matt Stafford, who looks like he's at dinner with some friends, and they have the Bucks game on in the past. He's making fun of Rodgers and slams beer. He slams a big beer. I've never been a great beer slammer, so I can't totally talk shit about Rodgers not being able to slam the beer. Though, I can always slam a beer, it just takes me a little longer. Like, I would say Bakhtiari is on the elite end of beer slamming. Stafford was pretty impressive, too. But you have to finish the beer once you start it if you're Rodgers. And Rodgers, I mean, got through half. Now, if it's like an IPA, something really thick, I get it. But I would imagine they're in Milwaukee. It's probably like Miller Lite. You got to finish that bad boy. Not the greatest night for Rodgers. But, you know, it's really watching the NBA. LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Paul, those guys love showing you how much wine they drink. You think that resonates with the masses? You know, last time I checked, majority of, at least men I know, aren't drinking wine. I know this. Everyone can relate to slamming beers. You know, as my metabolism slowed, I'd had to like turn to vodka soda a little bit more than beer. But, you know, if you're having a good time, you've got a game, you know, you can drink some beers. Bakhtiari has put on a performance so far these playoffs. He's had back-to-back home games where he slammed a couple beers. It was a week ago, maybe a little longer than that, where the 49ers offensive linemen, they waterboarded McGlinchey with his jersey over his mouth, and they poured two beers, and he drank it. I'm actually working, hopefully I get McGlinchey on this podcast. I think he'd be a pretty good interview. But let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag, something we do on this show, and answer questions. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. Slide in and I answer a question. Hey man, listen to your podcast when I'm in class, and it's gotten me through some very, very boring classes. I'm jealous. I wish I would have had podcasts when I went to school, because especially with the AirPods, you put one in your ear, especially if you sit in the back, teacher would never know. I'd just be listening to my favorite podcast. Here's my question. If Jimmy Garoppolo stays healthy, that might be the biggest if in the NFL. How far do you think the Niners get, and how good do you think Jimmy will be? If you tell me that Jimmy Garoppolo plays 16 games, I'll say the Niners win 9 or 10 games and compete for a wild card. I think it's that simple. I think he's that good. And I think most people in the NFL will tell you when he's playing, he's a really, really good player. Especially now he's had basically a year and a half. You know, he's had parts of two seasons ago. Then he had all of last season. And then he was hurt, so he got to mentally learn. And then this entire offseason to really learn Kyle Shanahan's offense. And to me, the biggest thing with Jimmy is he's got to take big steps. I have an article. Well, I guess if you're listening to this, it's Friday. I wrote in The Athletic. To me, the biggest area for growth for Jimmy is mentally, being smart. Think about this. He's been injured twice, both outside the pocket. And his game is a little bit like Rodgers and Russell Wilson. He scrambles and moves behind the line of scrimmage to ultimately throw. He's not necessarily like a Kaepernick type, Mariota. I don't even know if Mariota runs. I'm trying to think of a runner. You know, Lamar Jackson, a guy that looks to run. He's really kind of like, if he ever becomes a superstar, like I think he has the talent to be, I think his game would be a little Rodgers-like. Again, Rodgers is a Hall of Famer, and I'm not saying that he'll ever be that good. But my point is their playing styles are somewhat similar. It's why Rodgers has been banged up a lot. He moves a lot behind the pocket. He kind of freelances. So does Jimmy. And that's what makes him great. Well, last year against the Chiefs, when he tore his ACL, how did he tear his ACL? He wasn't inside the pocket. Because a lot of the major injuries inside the pocket are kind of fluky and random. The injuries outside the pocket, if you think about it, that's where Jimmy's were. The Kansas City one. And I think it was against Miami when he was in New England. Well, if you're outside the pocket, there's not an offensive lineman in front of you. And a defender, especially if it's a middle linebacker or safety, or even a defensive like an end, they're running full speed, you know, like 3, 4, 8 yards of getting just a full head of steam. When a defensive lineman hits you inside the pocket, even if it's like Khalil Mack or Aaron Donald, they've had to go through an offensive lineman that impedes their path a little bit. But if I'm on outside the pocket and the middle linebacker, you know, Bobby Wagner or, you know, Earl Thomas or whoever is chasing me, he's just chasing me, you know? He's just in a full sprint. So I think Jimmy's really got to get more careful outside the pocket. That to me is the key. What do you think about Iowa offensive linemen and Iowa tight ends? You can make an argument that Iowa is tight end university right now. I would agree. You got Kittle, then you got the two first round picks this year. Obviously Hockenson went in the top 10. Noah Fant went 20. Think about that. You got George Kittle, who once, you know, it probably goes Gronk, Kelsey, he's right up there. You know, you could say Ertz. He's different than Kelsey and Ertz because Kittle is a badass blocker. Now, Ertz and Kelsey are probably more consistent catching, especially intermediate and short. But Kittle, I mean, Kittle's got a chance to be a really, really good player. So I see that. And besides Riley Reiff from the Vikings, isn't Riley Reiff, I guess, is he on the Vikings now? I thought he was on the Packers. But I might have to Google that one. They don't have many busts of linemen. Gallery. and they have two potential first-round draft picks coming up next year. They're sometimes considered a fake team in college football. I don't think that. I think when you've heard before, like Colin Coward ripping them, and I don't even think he was ripping them. I think his point was pretty valid. They just don't have the team speed. Let's say they win that conference, which it's going to be hard for them, or it was with Urban and even with Harbaugh. They're not going to have the speed once you match up with an LSU, with a Georgia, with an Oklahoma. Remember when Stanford played them and McCaffrey looked like Walter Payton. It's just, it's more of a team speed. They have NFL players. They have a coach that's, you ask anyone in the NFL, Belichick, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, whoever, they love Kirk Ferentz. I mean, I worked for Pat Hill that was his assistant when they were in Cleveland together for Belichick, swore by him. I mean, Kirk Ferentz is a high-level coach. And it's why I always support when people make fun of him when he gets those contracts. He's turned Iowa into an NFL factory. Now, it's still hard to be like, there is a difference for Iowa than just Michigan, Ohio State, and even Penn State. You could argue that Iowa is basically Wisconsin minus 20%. Because Wisconsin consistently gets a little bit better athlete, you know, at the skill position. But I think similar, get good linemen, get good tight ends, get kind of the overachiever quarterback, you know, that will be selling insurance by the time he's 24, 25. Think about this. The one time Wisconsin had a sweet NFL quarterback, what happened? They went to the Rose Bowl. They just dominated. They won the conference. They went to the Rose Bowl, Russell Wilson. And, I mean, hell, Iowa, I was at a practice the other day with the Niners, like C.J. Beathard, probably one of the better Iowa quarterbacks in the last 10 years. Well, I go to practice, Nick Mullins already taken second team reps. So, yeah, I mean, Iowa's a tight end, O-lineman, you. I like that. Hey, John, diehard Packers fan here. What are your thoughts on the running back Aaron Jones? I think he's an underrated player that this year will break out since he'll be available for all the games and his head coach who loves to pound the rock. I'll be honest, because I don't want to sound like I'm just making shit up. I don't know that much about Aaron Jones. Besides, hearing Packer fans complain a lot that McCarthy wasn't playing him enough. I heard somewhere that Rodgers likes him a lot. Well, you just look at LaFleur, what he comes from. Obviously, in just coming from Tennessee, huge factor in the run with Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. His base with McVay and that system, they love running the ball. If Aaron Jones, who should be their starting running back, yes, should have a major role. But it feels like I've been hearing about Aaron Jones in fantasy leagues for a couple years now, and it's been some was there to be desired, right? But I do think it's fair to say you go in open-minded, you have a coach that wants to run the ball, you got to balance out your offense a little bit more. I'm just fascinated to see what their offense is going to look like. But yeah, I mean, I'd be bullish on Aaron Jones too. But again, I can't pretend to like have some scouting report. I don't know him that well as a player. I was wondering, with the Pats losing Gronk, have they done enough this offseason to replace his production? They've upgraded at receiver, but haven't done much with tight end. Well, I think you can look at it like this. I love Sony Michel. They drafted Sony Michel in the first round. His season was kind of hit or miss during the year, but then he was freaking awesome in the playoffs. I think he ran for over 400 yards in three playoff games, 4 or 5 touchdowns. I think it's fair to say that one of the breakout players in the NFL this year, that you look up, you know, at the end of December and you go, damn, Sony Michel has 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like, to me, when's the last time the Patriots had a true bell cow running back? One, they would, Bill Belichick drafts a running back in the first round. That was kind of crazy when he did that. I think he gets forgotten. Like, Sony is not just some mid-round guy that they found a diamond. Sony is a first-round blue chipper from Georgia who dominated in the playoffs. So I would say, yeah, it's just, what are they going to do to replace Gronk? And the more I thought about it, because Andre Iguodala the other day said that Steph and Clay were the black version of Brady and Gronk, and then I started thinking, well, if they are the black version of Brady and Gronk, if you remove Draymond from the Warriors, that's a pretty big deal. And it just got me thinking, like, losing Gronk, who is clearly over this last 6 or 7 year Patriots second dynasty, has been their second best player. I mean, and I know at different points in times, he's kind of been a shell of himself, but that is a pretty big loss. So I think they're going to depend heavily on Sony, which I confident he's going to have a good year. And they're going to need a lot out of N'Keal Harry. You know, when's the last time they had a rookie wide receiver do a lot? Now, they don't draft that many rookie wide receivers, but I'm a big N'Keal Harry guy, but he's got to give them, I think, safe to say, 60 to 70 catches and 6 or 7 touchdowns. Which, if I told you right now, if you're a Pats fan, N'Keal Harry catches 68 balls, 7 touchdowns, and 950 yards, you'd be like, that's a pretty good year. Yeah, right? Assuming Edelman's good, assuming they find some tight end to go with Benjamin Watson, and Sony rushes for, you know, over 1,000 yards. And Brady's Brady. And their defense is going to be good. I mean, they've added pieces of defense. I think the defense is going to be even better than it was last year, and it was good. How come everyone is always attributing the Patriots' success to their ability to be multiple in their schemes and different looks that they throw out at you on offense and defense? How come the league hasn't caught up similar to how the NBA caught up to three-point shooting? Well, one, I think part of most good offenses are multidimensional. You know, like when you look at the Rams are pretty one-dimensional. You know, their scheme is pretty basic. I think the multi-dimensional offenses would be the Saints and the Chiefs beside the Patriots. They could do a lot. Like on any given game, you don't know what's going to hit you. Like anything could hit you. They could run the ball down your throat. They could force feed tight ends. They could throw it to wide receivers. They can do a little bit of everything. I would say a lot of the really, really good offenses in the NFL, and those are the two that jump to my mind. A couple years ago, the Steelers, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith. Most of the good offenses are multidimensional. I think the reason not a lot of defenses are multidimensional is because the Patriots had the best defensive coordinator in the NFL, in Belichick. So most of these coordinators, you know, they just fall back on their base defense, which is either a 3-4 or 4-3. Like, that's what they feel comfortable doing. I mean, how many coaches besides Belichick can really just run? Like, what is the Patriots defense? I honestly don't know. I mean, how would you describe it? Their base is whoever their opponent is that weekend, which no other team in the NFL can say that. I actually give this guy credit. I think they've changed a lot, and maybe it's because of their personnel, is the Rams and Wade Phillips. Like, they're basically a hybrid 3-4, 4-3. I mean, they do a good job. Wade Phillips has done a good job. But Wade Phillips also 70-plus years old and has been in the league for 40 years. So it takes defense. I think it's really hard to find a great offensive coach that knows quarterbacks, but you can find offensive coaches. You know, I mean, they're only Sean Payton, Andy Reid, even like Kyle and McVay. Like, you're going to see this year a lot of these guys hired as head coaches are going to fail. But there are better offensive coaches than there are better defensive coaches. Like, how many, beside Belichick, name me 5 really good defensive coaches. Pete Carroll, Fangio. I mean, the list is short. Gus Bradley? Well, yeah, I'll give Gus. You know, I'm telling you, it's difficult. I'm probably Zimmer. I probably left a couple guys out, but there. If you notice a couple of those guys that I named, Zimmer's in his 60s. Pete Carroll's in his 60s. If you count Marinelli, he's old. You know, Gus is basically just copying what Pete did. So it's. There are a lot more seasoned offensive coaches, right? Like, think Andy's been in the league 25 years. Sean Payton feels like he's been in the league forever. The couple top offensive guys have really been around a long time. And then even the young guys, if you use McVay and Kyle, let's call it what it is, they're pretty unique. I mean, Kyle Shanahan's dad is one of the best offensive minds in NFL history, and Mike Shanahan. So he is, I mean, that's literally his father. I've been at Niner practice, and you just walk by, you're like, hey, Mike, this is Mike Shanahan. And Sean McVay has been around football all of his life with his dad or his grandpa, you know, was the one of the main parts of the 49er dynasty as the GM. And then he started coaching the moment he quit playing at 22. To me, that's a huge benefit. So, yeah, Sean McVay's my age, 33, 34 years old, but he's been coaching for 11 years in the NFL. His first year in the NFL was like 08. So he's been, you know, even at 33 years old, every year of his professional life has been in the NFL. It's kind of like Belichick. Belichick has been in the league, like he didn't go to college at all, right to the NFL, 75. And he's been in the league ever since. Huge Eagles fans here. and it comes with pessimism, but do you think the Eagles have done enough during the offseason to bolster the secondary to make a legitimate Super Bowl run to compete at the juggernaut offenses in the league? Well, I've talked to a couple people about this over the offseason. Their secondary on paper is not good. You know, Sidney Jones, a good player? I don't know. So far you'd have to probably lean no. Malcolm Jenkins, probably their best DB, is holding out because he wants a new contract. Who's their other corner? I guess they re-signed Darby, who injured his knee. I think what they tell you is our front seven is going to dominate. We're going to kick your ass up front, especially our defensive line. And we're going to win by scoring a lot of points and sacking the quarterback. Because that formula works. I think the Chiefs did it last year. I think, honestly, you want to hear a hot take from Middlecoff on a Thursday night? I think secondary talent in the secondary in 2019 is a little overrated. Would you rather have a lockdown secondary? One, they don't exist. Or a dominant defensive line? Because if you give me a dominant defensive line, look at the top three teams in sacks last year. Chiefs, playoffs. Ravens, playoffs. Steelers missed the playoffs on the last weekend of the season. And if it wasn't for the craziest things happening, like the history of their franchise, they're a playoff team. So if you can dominate up front, and this is like the best case scenario for the 49ers, just walking by their defensive line group, their DBs aren't very good. But they're going to hopefully have, you know, three double-digit sack guys. You know, and be, you know, to me, a good season sack-wise is in the mid-40s, and then on top of that, a bunch of pressure. Because if you got two or three guys as double-digit sack guys, that means you can't double-team the rest. So that means the randoms make plays. It's really kind of what the Eagles held their hat on when they won the Super Bowl. Like, when you have backups like Chris Long, who can give you five or six sacks, that means your double-digit sack guys, it feels like their 12 sacks are like 18. So, to me, the key is dominating up front. Love the different angles. Very glad I found you. Thanks, Thomas. What is the insight on why teams just straight up release players instead of trying to gain some compensation in a trade? Example, Bucks with Gerald McCoy. Or the Suns when they acquired Austin Rivers. I'm guessing terms of players' contract plays a part. Yeah, I think the Austin Rivers one might have just been bad. Might have just been a bad personnel decision. The McCoy one's pretty simple. No one was trading for $13 million. Because if you trade for him, here's the thing. When you get a vested veteran, I'm not exactly Johnny Cap manager, salary cap manager here. But a guy like Gerald McCoy, I think his salary cap hit is $13 million. And I don't know, I don't have his contract up. His base salary is relatively high. Well, if you trade for him, you're basically acknowledging he's probably going to make your team. Well, if he makes your team, his salary is then guaranteed. So, if you'd rather just, yeah, they're probably going to release him, then I can try to sign him. And if he really is shot, I can cut him, no big deal. And I don't feel obligated to keep him. So, I think the contract more in the NFL, whenever you see a good player cut, or even just an aging, older player that's still really, you know, still talented, like Gerald McCoy is still talented, cut, it is 1,000,000% the contract. It really, as crazy as it sounds, it's nothing. It's the talent, unless it's like, you know, like someone would trade for Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack right now. You know, their contract wouldn't hinder their ability, or Julio Jones, or whoever, you know, Odell Beckham. Like, young players for sure. But older players, I think teams simply look at, I'm not going to risk trading for an older player that might be shot who makes an astronomical amount of money. So that's where these guys with these big contracts can kind of get themselves in position where, God, no one's messing with them. Because it is kind of crazy. You're like, damn, they just, no one traded for them? Now, half the teams in the league run a base 3-4, give or take. He's only a 4-3 defensive lineman. So, did he officially sign with the Browns? I don't know. Maybe he's meeting with the Browns. I think I read today, tomorrow, as of Friday. Wouldn't shock me if he signs there. But I would imagine some teams still might pay him a decent chunk of change. And this is also why, when people crush like the Chris Ballards or whoever, why don't you spend more money? Well, you might have an extra million or two to pay a guy like this if you want him. I'm not saying he wants Gerald McCoy, but he would be in position to pay him if he did. So it always behooves you in the NFL to have some cap space available. How challenging is the Bills' route to a wild card berth and a realistic goal for 2019? I'd say it's pretty challenging. I mean, it's all gonna hinge on Josh Allen. Does Josh Allen become a guy that can throw 30 touchdowns and throw 58, 60% completion percentage? or is he struggling to throw for 20 touchdowns and they're just so reliant on their defense? To me, either him or Sam Darnold, one of the two guys, I don't know which, and I'm rooting for them both. I follow them both on Instagram. They seem like awesome guys. Like, you'd like to be friends with them and hang out with them. Big fan of them both. And I didn't like Josh Allen as a player. Still not in love with the player, but I'll be honest. I've grown to like the guy a lot. I'm rooting for him. I hope I'm wrong on that. But I just, you know, they signed a couple midget wide receivers. You know, their head coach is a really good defensive coach, but he doesn't really know anything about offense. They got Dable, the dude from Alabama, who's, you know, got a little too much meathead for me. I don't know. I'm rooting for the Bills. I actually would probably rather see the Bills be good than the Jets, but I'd probably lean the Jets are more likely. Because here's the one thing. I do feel confident about this. This is like a confident wishy-washy take. I'm confident that either the Bills or the Jets make a wild card this year. I just don't know which one. Like, to me, if the Bills do it, it's pretty clear, like, Josh Allen is a star, might be strong, but has one of those years, like, this guy's going to be a star. And I think we all think Sam Darnold's going to be pretty good. So if they do it, he's really good. It's probably a little bit easier because his head coach is a quarterback guy. And their defense is going to be better with Greg Williams. They got Le'Veon Bell. I'd probably lean the Jets, but I'm kind of sneaky rooting for the Bills. I know you've mentioned Ryan Grigson in the past, working with him at the Eagles. Why was he so bad as a GM? I just don't think he had a great feel for players. Like, the thing I always remember, he put a second-round grade on Von Miller. Now, listen, some opinions differ on players, but there are certain players in every draft where you go, like, there shouldn't have been anyone in your draft room that goes, you know what, Saquon Barkley? I don't think he's very good. I mean, that was kind of his take on Von Miller. I was like, I don't know, I don't see it. Like, it just, some players, like, yeah, everyone sees it, you know? This guy is just elite. he's just one of those guys. And it's just hard to explain. I just don't think he was ever a very good scout. And it proved out, you know, bully, you know, was he always the nicest guy to people? And again, bosses, there's just across a line of being a boss, like, intimidating. And to me, it's one thing to kind of rule with an iron fist if you have a track record, but when you're not very good at your job and people don't really respect you, can you be the asshole in the room? I don't know. And seeing Lewis Riddick articulate everything so well in terms of the game and player evaluation on TV the last couple of years, why isn't he considered the Jets opening? Listen, I've said over and over, I've been around Howie, Andy, Veach. I mean, these guys are some of the best in their field. And I always thought Lewis was right up there with them. As intelligent of as human as you'll meet, let alone football. And then he eat, breathes, and sleeps it. I mean, if Lewis got the opportunity to be a GM, you'd have a chance. Now, there is some randomness, you know, who his coach would be, all that stuff. I don't know. But I do know this. Lewis knows what he's talking about. You know, you can't be on television long enough without kind of getting exposed if you don't. Like, Lewis knows his shit. And Lewis loves it. I mean, he just eat, breathes, and sleeps, and he gets it. You know, he just kind of understands the team building, the coaching aspect, the scheme aspect. Now, I didn't always agree with him on players, but again, that's kind of natural. You're going to butt heads and differ on players. Like, one thing that I kind of hung my hat on in evaluation, I don't get as caught up if the guy has the physical attributes at certain things that he struggles at, because I would just look at it as a scout going, well, I just wouldn't want him to do that. We wouldn't ask him to do that. Or if our scheme dictated that he do that, we wouldn't mess with him. You know, and that's, I don't get as caught up with guys with certain mistakes that maybe some, the coaches do. You know, I probably differ a lot with coaches on players. Sometimes. But, you know, Lewis is good. I mean, Lewis is a smart SOB, man. Can you comment on whether or not you think the CFL is still producing any NFL-level talent? When I was in the NFL, it produced a couple guys every year. We brought in a guy, I think he ended up signing with the Saints. Tom Johnson, actually, turned out to be a pretty good player. I tried to get this one guy from BC, but he ended up staying in BC. He was a good player, too. I think it's just kind of random. You know, it just depends on who's in their league. I think they're producing about the same as they always have. I also think one thing that's hurt the CFL a little bit, this is just on the fly, actually, it just crossed my mind, the 90-man rosters. So there was a huge you know, at the end of training camp, when you went from 80 to 53, there's an extra now 20 guys that kind of rotates in and out of practice squads that would have been immediately in the CFL. So maybe they actually are thinking about it, getting a little less NFL talent just because the rosters have been expanded in the offseason. In CFL, like, would you rather take your chance at a training camp, even if you are like the 85th guy, or go to the CFL? Well, if you're 23 or 24 years old and from America, you're going to take your chance in training camp. So the Canadian Football League, you have to commit like right now. Well, if you're in an OTA, you're not going to leave the OTA, even if you are one of the last men on the roster to go to the CFL. Just because you'll just be telling yourself, especially if you're from Alabama or Baylor or USC, I'm going to make this team once the pads come on. So I think the 90-man roster, thinking about it now, has hurt the CFL a little bit. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. Tell all your friends. Have a good weekend. Don't drink too much. Don't have too much fun. Well, I love Memorial Day, even though I didn't even realize it was Memorial Day. Peace. Godspeed. Adios.